Art Buchwald, the lovable teddy bear humorist and columnist, may have been the most unlikely Marine in all of World War II. In his autobiography, Leaving Home, he wrote with endearing candor, "People are constantly amazed when I tell them I was a Marine. For some reason, I don't look like one, and I certainly don't act like one. But I was, and according to God or the tradition of the Corps, I will always be a Marine." Buchwald ran away from a troubled childhood and heartbroken when a summer romance failed. He persuaded a street drunk to sign as his father the permission he needed to enlist in the Marines at the age of 17. That he survived basic training on Paris Island was a minor miracle. He was always in a jam for his bumbling ways, terrorized by his drill instructor, Pete Benardi of Elmhurst, Long Island. Buchwald spent the war in the South Pacific attached to a Marine ordnance outfit loading ammunition onto Marine fighter planes that were dueling with Japanese Zeros in the skies over places like Guadalcanal, Okinawa, and Midway. He was on a tiny island called Engebi. Buchwald was not much more competent on Engebi than he had been at Paris Island. Loading a large bomb onto a Marine plane, he hit the wrong lever and dropped it onto the tarmac, sending his buddies scattering, convinced they were about to be blown up. Finally, Buckwall's sergeant assigned him to work on the squad's mimeograph newsletter and to drive a truck, reasoning he wouldn't do much harm to himself or others in those jobs. His sergeant told him later, "You had the ability to screw up a two-car funeral. Anything you touched ceased to function." Buchwald also learned more than he wanted to know about anti-Semitism. Many of the small-town boys he served with had never known a Jew, and they were quick to repeat the bigotry of their upbringing. Buchwald, much more a man of wit and words than fist, nonetheless, found himself in numerous fights after having been called a kike or Christ killer. But then he decided it just wasn't worth all the anger and bruises, so he responded, "Stuff it," and walked away. Now, on reflection, he says, "I can't maintain people picked on me just because I was Jewish. They picked on me because I was an asshole," followed by that familiar Buchwald laugh. Buchwald's life after the war began at the University of Southern California, where he enrolled under the GI Bill, even though he didn't have a high school diploma. In the crush of veterans registering in 1946, the admissions office simply didn't check, and by the time he was found out, Buchwald was a fixture on campus and accepted as a special student. At USC, Buchwald began to hone the gentle, mocking style of humor that would make him one of journalism's best-known columnists and a high-priced public speaker. He wrote for the campus newspaper and a humor magazine. He was friendly on campus with Frank Gifford, the All-America football hero, David Wolper, later one of Hollywood's most successful producers, and Pierre Cossette, the man behind the Grammy Awards on television. It was a fantasy come true for this funny little man from a succession of foster homes in New York. His Walter Mitty life took an even more romantic turn when he learned the GI Bill was good in Paris as well as in the United States. Determined to become another Hemingway or Fitzgerald, Buchwald hitchhiked to New York and caught an old troop ship for France. He lived the life of an expatriate on the modest stipend the GI Bill provided him for registering for classes at the Alliance Française, drinking Pernod late into the night in Montparnasse, stringing for the Daily Variety back in the United States, hanging out with new friends who would later become famous writers, William Styron, Peter Matheson, James Baldwin, Mary McCarthy, Irwin Shaw, Peter Stone. As he recounted in Growing Up, Buchwald loved the life. "We had just come out of the war with great optimism," he said. "It was a glorious period." It became even more glorious when Buchwald talked himself into a job at the International Herald Tribune, the English-language newspaper that was distributed throughout Europe and served as a piece of home for American tourists. In 1949, just 7 years after he'd been rejected by his summertime sweetheart and joined the Marines in a desperate attempt to find a new life, Art Buchwald had talked his way into one of the most glamorous jobs in journalism. Paris After Dark by Art Buchwald quickly became one of the most popular items in the paper, and it led to the byline humor column that made him the best-known American in Paris. He was the city's most popular tourist guide for visiting stars such as Frank Sinatra, Humphrey Bogart, Lauren Bacall, and Audrey Hepburn. His books became bestsellers, And when he came home 16 years later, he was an even bigger star in Washington with his own table at the most popular restaurant in the capital, and lecture fees now at five figures, often with a private plane for transportation. He was practically an uncle to the various Kennedy offspring. When he went to the Redskins games, he sat in the owner's box. He summered on Martha's Vineyard with pals Catherine Graham, Mike Wallace, Bill Styron, and Walter Cronkite. However glamorous his life had become, however, he never forgot he was a Marine. When Colin Powell was preparing to leave the military and enter civilian life, Buchwald offered to advise him on what lecture agencies would serve him best. Powell's assistant called Buchwald, inviting him to lunch with the general at the Pentagon. Buchwald said, "Lunch? Don't I get a parade? I was in the Marine Corps 3.5 years, and I never had a parade." When Buchwald arrived at Powell's office, the general said, "Follow me." He took Buchwald into a large room where Powell had assembled 50 of his staff. As Buchwald entered, they all came to attention and gave him a salute. After all those years of people not believing he had been a Marine, Buchwald had a parade with the chairman of the Joint Chiefs at his side in the Pentagon. He laughs now when he thinks about how much attention he received from the Marine brass once he moved to Washington. "They said I was a great Marine. I was a lousy Marine. But at the last Marine ball I attended, colonels were coming up to have their pictures taken with me. I love that." For Buchwald, it goes well beyond the attention he gets at Marine ceremonies. "I had no father to speak of, no mother. I didn't know what I was doing. Suddenly I'm in the Marines, and it's my family. Someone cared about me, someone loved me. That's what I still feel today." Despite his lovably rumpled appearance, he also maintains certain habits he learned at Paris Island. He keeps his personal effects neatly arranged, just as he did in his footlocker during basic training. His shoes are always shined to a high gloss. He always has an extra pair of socks, just as the Marines taught him. During the Vietnam War, he was caught between conflicting emotions. He was against that war, yet when the Marine Corps asked him to record some radio commercials for their recruiting efforts, he happily complied. He was flattered, in fact, and after all, he was a Marine. He realized that his old loyalties and his current thinking were in conflict only when friends began to point out the inconsistencies of his behavior. So he stopped recording the Marine commercials. Buchwald has written about his Marine Corps experience so often, fellow leathernecks often approach him to compare notes, inevitably saying, "You think your drill instructor was tough? Mine was the toughest in the Corps." Buchwald never concedes. He knows Pete Benardi was the toughest. In 1965, Life magazine asked Buchwald to return to Paris Island for a week of basic training to recall the old days. He agreed if he could take his old drill instructor, Pete Benardi. He found Benardi working as a security guard at the World's Fair in New York and arranged for him to get time off work. Benardi remembered Buchwald from basic training saying, "I was sure you'd get killed," adding warmly, "You were a real shitbird." In his book, Buchwald recalls they had a nostalgic week at Paris Island and nothing much had changed. He may have been famous, but he was still a klutz. On the obstacle course, Benardi was still yelling lines like, "25 years ago, I would have hung your testicles from that tree." At the end of the week, they shook hands and parted friends. A quarter century later, Buchwald received a call from a mutual friend telling him Benardi was gravely ill with cancer. Buchwald telephoned the old drill instructor, whose voice was weak. Benardi told Buchwald he didn't think he could make this obstacle course. In leaving home, Buchwald describes taking a photo from their Life magazine layout and sending it to Benardi with the inscription, "To Pete Benardi, who made a man out of me. I'll never forget you." Benardi's wife later told Buchwald the old drill instructor put the picture up in his hospital room so everyone could see it and read the inscription. Benardi also had one final request. That autographed picture from the shitbird, the screw-up Marine he was sure would be killed, little Artie, the guy he called Brooklyn as he tried to make a leatherneck out of him. Corporal Benardi, the toughest guy Buchwald had ever met, asked that the picture be placed in his casket when he was buried. I confess that I weep almost every time I read that account. for it so encapsulates the bonds within that generation that last a lifetime.